Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here today on this call for our full year 2018 results presentation. The management team will cover our presentation before opening the Q&A session, starting with questions on telephone and ending with questions sent via web. Before getting started, I would like to remind you that this event is being recorded, and it will be available for playback later out from our corporate site. I also invite you to review the legal disclaimer of our document. I now will hand over to company CEO, Mr. Borja de la Cierva. Thank you, Borja.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Borja de la Cierva. I was appointed Chief Executive Officer of GEA Group on the 28th of December last year. I have been independent board member since September 2016, and previously, I have worked for other large Spanish and international retailers. Before starting the presentation, I'd like to make a comment on the voluntary tender offer that our reference shareholder announced 3 days ago. The board of directors made a statement responding to that announcement, and it contains all that the company wants to say at this point in time. Therefore, we won't take questions regarding LetterOne, nor its tender offer, and this presentation is about 2018 GEA Rent results and business plan for the next 5 years. Let me present today's speakers. We are quite new in GEA, but bring enough experience. Enrique joined the company last December and provides a long expertise in debt refinancing and company's transformation. He's excited about the industry dynamics and the opportunity GEA represent in the long term. María Miralles partnered at Oliver Wyman, who knows very well the company because he has been working with us in several projects as a consultant before being appointed Chief Transformation Officer. She's leading, together with me, the transformation of GEA that has already started. We are representatives of the new management that is working with existing talent to turn around the business, and we are brought specifically for that purpose. After 6 weeks since my appointment, I'd like to share my first vision on this company. I have laid out in this slide a few highlights of our business that demonstrate we're important in the grocery retail market. I'll point out just a few of them. GEA is number one in convenience store network, and that is the first traffic driver, the most important reason for our customers to come to our stores. We have scale, more than 9 billion of sales under banner, and more than 45% penetration of our own private label. GEA is number one franchisor in Spain and among the top franchisors worldwide. We know how to do that business, and we have done it for more than 20 years. We serve over 20 million customers, and that's just those in our loyalty program across 4 countries. We have a growing omnichannel business that, after increased volumes by almost 40% in 2018, will play an important part of our future. We can make last mile cheaper than anybody else. This is a fantastic platform, a relevant player in grocery retail in Spain, with presence in 3 more countries in which has succeeded with the same business model. Let's go to the index. 2018 has been a very turbulent year for GEA, probably the most critical period since company's foundation 40 years ago. Today, we would like to discuss with you 3 topics. First, the financial review of 2018, in which the most important is that the company has generated 384 recurring cash or adjusted EBITDA, in line with guidance given in October, slightly above the average of the range of between 350 million and 400 million euros. Enrique will explain in detail recent year performance and how we got there. Secondly, and most importantly, we'd like to share our vision on how we will rebuild DIA and create value for customers and therefore for all of our shareholders over the next 5 years. Discussion on our business plan will be conducted by Maria. And finally, I make some wrap-up conclusions and provide some color on how do we see the future. And let me hand over to Enrique to go through the financial result. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Enrique Wakert, Group CFO speaking. Let's move to the first block covering financial review of 2018. And in slide 7, we start giving you a helicopter view on the basic issues around the 2018 figures with the top line. Sales performance across two basic measures, gross sales under banner and then net sales. As you can see, gross sales under banner in 2018 are down 1.65 billion from 11 billion down to 9.4, basically stemming from FX headwinds, okay? As you very well know, we've had a very, very tough context in terms of FX, seeing in the same year and at the same time a 40% devaluation of the Argentinian peso vis-a-vis the euro. To add to that figure, also a 16% devaluation of the Brazilian real. So that's explaining like 94% of the fall in gross sales under banner. Apart from that, impacting that figure is negative like-for-like, which on a group-wide basis is minus 3.6%. That's taking out some 400 million of sales. And this is somehow offset by incremental 300 million sales coming from an increase in commercial space of roughly 1.5% in the year. Bringing this to net sales, the reduction in net sales is 930 million from 8.2 to 7.3 billion. Again, the majority of the effect corresponding to the FX devaluation impact in the euro translated amounts. But opening up the figure by country, we see that the behavior is somehow concentrated in Spain, Portugal, and Brazil as a decrease, and in Argentina as an increase. Obviously, the Argentinian increase stemming from the high inflation context that the country is experiencing right now. The like-for-like that we are seeing in these four countries is -2.3% in Spain, -5% in Portugal, -2.8% in Argentina, measured in volume terms, so disaffecting from inflationary behavior, and then -8.1% in Brazil. So that's pretty much the context of like-for-like that is behind this net sales figure. Let's move now to the next slide, 8, where we move from top line to adjusted EBITDA. We've seen a very substantial decrease in adjusted EBITDA in 2018 vis-a-vis 2017. We're going down from 519 million down to 338. And decoupling the effects which explain this reduction, let's start with FX effect is minus 39 million. On top of that, you have inflationary accounting under IAS 29 impacting negatively minus 36 million. And then you have what we could call the organic contribution of the four countries. Now, organically, without FX and IAS 29, we are decreasing by 106 million the adjusted EBITDA, with the bulk of that effect coming from Spain. Well, the driving factor, or the most important driving factor behind this decrease in EBITDA across all four countries is clearly the negative like-for-like that we mentioned before. This is a food retail industry. Top line drives everything, and operational leverage is very important. So when we are still in a context of negative like-for-like, this turns into a EBITDA erosion, which is significant. In Spain, on top of that, we have some other effects apart from the negative like-for-like, like, for example, the fact that we have been defranchising 109 stores, which have a negative impact in this adjusted EBITDA figure, and also subsequent sale and leaseback transactions are incrementing rental costs and impacting negatively on this adjusted EBITDA figure. Okay. This brings us to a 2018 year-end adjusted EBITDA figure of 338. To compare that to the guidance we provided in October, we have to make apples for apples and add back to this EBITDA figure Clarel, discontinuing operations, which were included in our guidance, and also we were not providing in our guidance any IS 29 adjustment. So 338 plus 35 plus 11 brings the comparable figure to 385, which is clearly meeting the target that we set back in October and closer to the upper end of the range. So all in all, I think it shows a resilient 2018 despite all the perfect storm scenario that we've been having, and I will elaborate on that further on. Now, if we move to slide 9, we want to give a quick overview of the main drivers of the P&L of the company in 2018 as compared to last year. To do that, we prefer, or we think it's more clear, to take out of the 2018 figures the impact of the impairment test. Because it's very significant, it's impacting 288 million our net profit, and because it's impacting it across three different lines. The impairment of stores, which is in the disclosing impairment of assets, the impairment of deferred tax assets, which is impacting in tax, and then the impairment of the goodwill of discontinued operations, Clarel, which is also in a different line. Sorry. So if we take out the impairment effect, we would have a 2018 adjusted that we're going to be comparing in broad terms with 2017. We have already covered the 928 decrease in net sales in previous slide, and we have already explained the 180 million decrease in adjusted EBITDA in the previous slide. So that brings us to the other cash items. You have full detail of the items included here in the documentation, but let it be said that this amount is roughly twice that of last year because we've had in 2018, obviously, larger one-offs, mostly related to things like advisory fees, things like share-based payment transactions, things like restructuring and efficiency improvement measures, so on and so forth. You have, again, full detail in the documentation. So that brings the EBITDA figure for 2018 down to 246 versus 471 last year. Going down across the P&L, we have depreciation and amortization with a 5% increase. That's stemming basically from two facts. To the extent we're doing far more remodelings than new openings, and to the extent that remodelings have a shorter amortization period, that's impacting EI increasing somehow the depreciation charge. And also in Argentina, as a result of IAS 29 and revaluation of fixed assets, you have some incremental impact in amortizations. So going down to EBIT, we end up with EBIT of minus 15 versus 218 last year. And then we see net financial result increasing by close to 60% or nearly 32 million additional. Well, as you perfectly understand, this is impacted by the fact that in 2018, we're having much larger average debt. We're having much higher cost of this debt, more interest, sorry. And very especially in a place like Argentina, where interest rates have gone sky high in the macro context of hyperinflation that the country is suffering. Computing also the gain from monetary position that derives from IAS 29 accounting, we bring the earnings before tax figure to minus 32 in 28 versus 165 last year. Income tax is obviously much lower because we have much lower taxable income, and we come to consolidated profit of minus 48 versus 113 last year. Taking out discontinued operations, we go down to net attributable profit of minus 65 versus 101. If we measure in terms of what we call net underlying profit. In other words, taking out one-off exceptional or highly volatile components, the comparison is plus 50 million versus 191 last year. So a decline of 74% or 142 million euro less. Moving to slide 10, we're going to give you a brief summary of what has happened to the net debt figure of the company, which is increasing over the year by half billion, from 945 million up to 1,452. So basically, we start with how much cash has been generated by our business, which is an EBITDA figure of 246 that we can split into adjusted EBITDA of 338 minus other cash items of 92. So the net of adjusted EBITDA and other cash items would be the EBITDA figure of the year of 246. Now, this cash we've been generating through our operations has been deployed as follows. First, we have invested a significant amount of CapEx, 344, basically because we've had a very intense activity in 2018 of new openings, 336 stores, and also a remodeling of 1,140 stores. To be precise, in Spain, for example, the CapEx figure in 2018 has nearly doubled the figure of 2017. This investment in CapEx has been somewhat alleviated by net proceeds coming from divestments of 94 million. But then the next significant effect we've had in terms of increasing net debt is the evolution of trade working capital. As you are perfectly aware, especially in the last part of the fourth quarter, we've had profit warnings, downgrades, and very, very high financial concerns coming from suppliers. So that has resulted in a substantial reduction of supplier financing by year end. This is pretty obvious. For example, if you calculate trade working capital days over cost of goods sold, the figure of negative trade working capital is coming from 54.5 days in 2017 down to 45.1 days. So it's clearly depicting to which extent we've enjoyed less supplier financing, and we've had to finance those needs with incremental net debt. Okay, and also the context, for example, in Argentina, where they have hyperinflation, creates significant pressure on suppliers to be paid on much shorter payment terms. So all in all, this impact of less supplier finance has been negatively impacting the net debt figure. Also visible if you measure the amount of outstanding confirming by year end, which is roughly 200 million, versus the figure we have last year, which was 367. On top of that, we've deployed cash to pay a dividend of 110 million, and we've paid, of course, interest on our debt of roughly 86. We've paid taxes, 19 million, and then you have a net effect of FX and others of roughly 40. With respect to the next slide, 11, it's basically a summary of the recent history of the company from 2011, when the company demerged from Carrefour, up to today, because there are two distinct phases in the history of the company. The first phase was primarily focused in domestic acquisitions and continued fast growth. We completed acquisitions of Schlecker, El Arbol, Eroski stores, etc. And we were also exiting countries where a meaningful presence was not important, like France and Turkey. That fast expansion gave rise and came at a cost. Okay, that gave rise to a second period in which we lost focus on the basics, like the quality of our value proposition, the coherency of our network, and some others. Instead of being customer-oriented, we became much more supplier-oriented in pursuit of margin. And that turned into the deterioration of some key operating metrics that you see there. In quarter four 2018, we've publicly announced a new strategy, and we've been working since then to turn our business around. In the financial context, we have been able to secure a refinancing of $896 million, and a standby underwriting agreement for a potential $600 million capital increase, as you know. Also, we have announced disposals of non-core assets, which will additionally support our capital needs. And most importantly, we have clearly formulated how we will bring about the change that we seek to have in the company, and that will be discussed later on. Going to slide 12, it's just a brief summary of the context that we've been living in the last period, especially in 2018. Many of the factors have been named, but highly competitive environment, aggressive expansion of franchisee network, resulting in a relatively low quality in some instances, lower customer centricity, an acquisition strategy lacking integration experience and causing some distraction, and so on and so forth. So the history end of 2018, you know well, is profit warnings, multiple chains in management, rating downgrades, and all resulting in substantial liquidity constraints by year-end. Moving to slide 13, and what we are engaged and working into right now is providing a sustainable capital structure to the company. We are well on our way to try and complete that, and this has two relevant pieces. One is the debt refinancing, and the other the capital increase, but one is linked to each other. Okay, the debt refinancing, as we have announced yesterday, basically we're going to be granted, we have the support of the company's banks, to extend maturities substantially to 4 years, 2023, for the largest part of the debt, even though it's contemplated a repayment coming from disposal of non-core assets. But I think this refinancing, if successfully implemented in the very short term, will be a game changer, because it essentially it'll be allowing the company 4 additional years to concentrate on what matters, which is the commercial turnaround, without having any constraints on debt or maturities. With respect to the capital increase, we're aiming for a $600 million capital, new capital issue to be underwritten by Morgan Stanley, and which is the solution that we have to restore the negative net equity position that the company is showing by year-end, and which, according to law, must be restored promptly. So with this capital increase that we're looking for, the leverage ratio would be going down pro forma basis from 3.8 times year-end to 2.3 times. And I'd like to hand it over back to Borja.
Thank you, Enrique. Let me introduce the context of our strategic update. We operate in a sector that is changing massively and quickly. Listen, I have been in retail for more than 20 years, and I have never seen such a dramatic change in such a short period of time. And the company hasn't adapted to those changes, as Enrique explained, and has fallen asleep. And of course, some competitors took advantage of that. These changes in the grocery industry reflect global fundamental shifts in consumer behaviors. And now the keywords for customers are fresh, healthy, digital, service, quality, small, close, easy, quick, and others you can read. Those words are what best describes new customers. And our plan is a clear line from where we are today to where we want to be. And this line is driven by our ambition. And this is the only slide I will read for you. Our ambition is to be the day-to-day grocery retailer closest to our customers, providing them with the best value convenience through our extensive omnichannel store network. Closest is linked to proximity, the first driver of traffic. Value means price, quality, and uniqueness in our own private label. And omnichannel means, again, easy and convenient. And the company is not broken despite its poor performance in 2018. We have the best assets to compete and unbeatable strengths. First, the largest convenience network. Convenient is the first driver of traffic because close is the most important for customers nowadays. Second, we have scale, that's obvious. Then we have the best customer database to build loyalty, and we're doing. We enjoy long-term relationship with suppliers, who, by the way, have been very supportive with us over the last months, and a wide private label ranges well recognized by customers, with a number of airlines that will increase very soon. We can operate the omnichannel, making last mile cheaper than anybody else. And finally, a unique franchise model which enhances sustainable profitability, both for the company and for our partners, the franchisees. And I hand over to Maria to explain how we pretend to transform the company over the next 5 years.
Thank you, Borja. Our transformation is based on three main principles. Firstly, we want to simplify and upgrade the way we work. Secondly, we want to meet again current customer standards. And thirdly, we want to become a company which is resilient with the current retail disruption that Borja was referring to. Our transformation is initiated indeed in Spain and Portugal. And once those elements are tested and validated, will be rolled out to the rest of the countries as Brazil and Argentina. Within our transformation, we are working already mainly in 5 pillars. The first one is transform our commercial offer. We want to get an offer which is best in class for our customers. We also want to change our store network, not only optimizing that the number of stores, but also changing the format and having a more differentiating proposition. We want to also re-engage again with our franchisees, building a win-to-win model with them. And all of this needs to be reinforced, but by a more effective execution within the stores, but also within the headquarters. A critical point also will be to change our culture. We are already working on that. We need to be more focused on customers, more transparent and more open, but we will need to make sure that we drive a performance which is measured constantly by financial metrics and operational metrics. All of this will allow us to continue recruiting and attracting the best talent in the market. Let me get into some of the details. When talking about our commercial offer, we want to step up our fresh offering. That means offering better fresh products in terms of freshness and appearance, but also making sure our fruit and veggies or meat or chicken tastes good. This will allow us to increase our share, but also to drive more frequency to our stores. In terms of private label, you know it's one of our core assets within our strategy. And we will continue, and we are continuing, betting on this. But we want to improve our standards, not only in terms of product formulation, but also in terms of packaging, effectiveness, and communication. And we want to innovate further than we are currently doing. In terms of price, we want to reinforce our good price perception. We are leaders in price. The idea is that we are going to reduce promotions and invest more on sales prices, but we are going to also optimize the promotional program and make sure we personalize those promotions. That will allow us to have a more one-to-one conversation with customers and more effective sales proficiency. We will also want to reduce our assortment, because in some cases it's too deaf for some categories, but in other cases we are missing some specific customer needs. So we are already working on this. This will allow us to be more simple in the stores, but covering more effectively the needs that customers are asking for. And all of this is supported by outstanding shopper experience. A store will be simple to navigate, easy to understand, and making sure allow employees to focus more on serving clients rather than replenishing the stores. Quality and convenience will be the focus of our commercial offer. To deliver that commercial offer, we are already working on an omnichannel ecosystem. The omnichannel ecosystem will be focused on convenience, which basically means delivering what customers want, when they want it, and where they want it. Our idea is to cover all the customer missions that are focused on weekly basis. And we are going to make sure we deliver a frictionless experience, which means is we are going to allow them to have click and collect services, or delivery at home, or come to the store and enjoy our environment. All of this will be delivered from offline stores, but also from our online channels. Let me give you an example. Our D&Go format is an example of when we execute properly and when we are focused on convenience missions, we are able not to only drive sales, but also to attract new customers. Our D&Go format have proved to us that we are able to retain our loyal customers, but to attract two new customer segments and to build a new reputation for Dia. Franchisees will continue being one of our strengths. We want to, and we are already reviewing the model and build a more win-win situation for both sides. We are already reviewing some of those franchisees' performance, and we are already taking back some of those stores. We want to upgrade those stores, taking back to good performance, and at that point, we will look for new franchisees to manage those stores. In order to do that, what we are doing is we are changing our standards to recruit the franchisees. So we are introducing a new model, which will be supported by a more effective and rounded training to make sure those franchisees can deliver according to the new standards. But in order to motivate them and engage them with the transformation, we are implementing a new incentive program, which will be linked not only to financial standards, but also to operational metrics. And this will allow us to drive better service and better offer, but also share more profit with them. Remember, I was talking about principles, and I was talking about simplifying and improve the way we work. That means have a more effective execution. That execution will be done at three levels: downstream, within the stores, but also upstream, within the supply chain and headquarters. At the store level, we are already reviewing the way our employees work. We are reducing the operational complexity, and we are launching some quick wins to make sure that we can deliver the best of we do with the current, while maintaining the service. All these new improvements will be already integrated and probably upgraded with the new store model that we will be launching. In terms of supply chain, we are changing the mindset. Up to now, our supply chain was very focused on cost. Now it's going to be focused on serving the stores, which will allow us to free up some cost and which allow us to have a different conversation with our suppliers. We are also defining a new model for our warehouses and delivery to the stores. And lastly, we are already working on reviewing the processes and way of working at the headquarters, changing part of the organization, implementing advanced analytics to make sure we take decisions based on facts, and upgrading part of our IT infrastructure. All of this is orchestrated by a transformation management office, which role will be to maintain the vision and make sure we are meeting the standards set by the company and the milestones. As a result of all of this, we are expecting, and we are already seeing in some of the pilots, decrease in terms of days on hand for the inventories, decrease in terms of loss, improvements in terms of product availability in the stores, decreasing the time to market to be faster to answer customer needs, and we are already having more control and visibility about what's going on in the stores. Also, a critical one will be to change dramatically our culture. We need to think from a customer perspective, not from a client perspective. We need to be open and more transparent, and we are already doing that. We are implementing different performance incentives to make sure everybody is focused on the transformation, And also, as you know, we are recruiting new talent within the company.
Thank you, Maria. Let me emphasize what Maria is saying about the culture. When we designed the business plan in 2018, we became fully aware of the need to get on board new talent to ensure its execution and to bring the customer into the middle of every decision. That's the cultural change we need, and it's the starting point of the transformation plan. And now we have a winning team. This is a combination of existing talent with a long experience and demonstrated skills in India, and new talent brought to transform the business. Most of them were recruited over the last 6 months and decided to join India in difficult times because they believe in the turnaround. And all of them, as well as the people reporting to this team, are fully committed with the execution of this business plan that has already started. This is, believe me, a winning team, and we will be, and it will be completed very soon. Let me conclude and summarize this presentation. DIA has historically performed, but recently went through a setback. But we have multiple structural advantages when comparing with any other competitor. Our plan is a transformation focused on execution and focused on customer. And therefore, we have a clear strategy to build the new DIA. We all firmly believe in the success of our strategy, given the strong foundation that DIA, the proven upside from the action we are implementing now, and the winning team we have already in place. Finally, on the back of our renewed strategy, we wanted to reconfirm the guidance that the company put forward when we presented our third Q results last November. As you have seen, we deliver on the guidance provided for 2019 with EBITDA in the top part of the range and the CAPEX with the €350 million mark. And we continue to see 2019 as a transition year, where we have to invest in sharpening our commercial model, refocus the company on effective execution, while prudently deploying CAPEX and finalize the new commercial model. We expect then an EBITDA upturn in 2020, followed by healthy growth thereafter, with mid-single-digit top-line growth and more normalized levels of CAPEX in the 3-4% on sales region as we roll out the new commercial model. That is all from us. Now we'll be delighted to answer your questions. Thank you.
This is the end of the presentation. Now we are happy to take all the questions you may have. Operator, you can open the session, please.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin our question and answer session. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. And if you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, star and 1 if you wish to ask a question, and hash key to cancel that request. Our next question comes from the line of Andrew Gwynne. Please ask your question. Your line is now open.
Good morning, everybody. So I've got quite a long list, but let's just keep it to two or three. So first, just on Q4 trading, I think you've changed the base of comparison. It does look like Q4 trading was very weak. I just wonder if you can give us approximate numbers and maybe just a comment on how the company is faring, in terms of customer-facing trading at the moment, not just obviously with suppliers. The second one, just on the rights issue, I'm just wondering if you can give a bit more clarity on the timing of that. Maybe I've missed that. But also, actually, I think the conditions for Morgan Stanley underwriting. And then the last one is a sort of very big picture, but do you think profits up or down next year? Thank you, or rather 2019. Thanks.
with respect to Q4, let me remind you, and we disclosed this on page 18 of the earnings release note, that we have changed the measurement of like-for-like to make it more stringent, more conservative. So we provide figures under the new refined or sharpened definition, and we compare that to the previous ones which would have come up. I invite you to take a look because it's they're pretty different, and we're not providing a breakdown of this like-for-like new definition of like-for-like quarter by quarter. If I were to give you a general comment on Q4, it's happened pretty much aligned with the forecast that we had in October. So we have, in other words, we haven't seen anything particularly different to what we were expecting the year to end when we were forecasting fourth quarter from the third quarter numbers. Conditions around Morgan Stanley and the rising are defined and are you know, explained in a lot of detail in the consolidated annual accounts. And, you know, little to say at this point in time. The underwriting is in place, and will keep going on. It has to be confirmed at the time we launch the capital increase. But so far, everything remains in place, and we are moving closer to promoting the capital increase. And the third question, sorry.
So it was question for the profit for the capital increase.
Well, considering the you know, the time frame that we have to fix the net shareholders' equity thing, the general shareholders' meeting to bring or to get the approval to the capital increase should happen before March 31st. And once it's eventually approved, the capital increase would take place. I mean, hopefully, before presenting the first quarter results. So, you know, let's say mid-April or something like this. And also you had a question which related to guidance. Listen, following legal advice, we are prevented from issuing any forward-looking statements or going into any future details of the business plan. So I'm sure you appreciate that we have to follow our legal advice, and therefore we cannot be more granular on that basis. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Jose Rito. Please ask your question.
Yes. Hi, good morning. So my first question related with this timeline that you just presented. So the capital increase expected by the end, by the mid of April. How this works, considering that we have now an offer from Lector One. So I would assume that the capital increase will have to be approved by Lector One. So considering that we have this offer, can the capital increase go ahead? That will be my question. I know that you don't want to comment on this offer from Lector One, but just to understand how the capital increase could move forward, considering that we have this offer from Lector One. And my second question related with the balance sheet. So you presented that you expect a leverage of 2.3 times net debt to EBITDA. Do you think this is the right structure? So this 2.3 times post the capital increase, do you think this is the right structure to allow the company to apply a new strategy, considering that the industry stands around one time net debt EBITDA? And my final question on the franchisees, if you can give a little bit more visibility how the like-for-like has been performing, and also related to this, you mentioned in the release that we are integrating further franchisees into own stores. But can you explain why? I think this is a relevant change in strategy that could impact profitability, considering this was a driver over the last years, and how much percentage of the franchisees could be integrated into own stores. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jose. Three questions we can answer. I will answer the first. Listen, the company has to resolve the problem of the net equity. And the board has the duty to make a proposal to the AGM to solve that problem. And the roadmap of the company, as you have seen in the presentation, is to propose a capital increase that is committed with the lenders in the as a part of the agreement for the refinancing. So the roadmap of the company still is the same, despite the other factors that you have mentioned.
Yeah, with respect to the second on balance sheet, let me summarize the following. It's you know, the leverage ratio is 2.3 pro forma capital increase, as we disclosed there. The new strategy is essentially a five-year plan in which basically you're going to have at the beginning of that time frame the turnaround. So the good thing, I think, more than the factual data point of the leverage ratio, the starting point, is that, as I mentioned in the capital structure, we have from the debt side nearly four-year time without maturities. In other words, we believe that the debt structure that we're going to have allow the company enough time first to complete successfully the initial transition, the initial turnaround, and then organically we'll be reducing that initial number of leverage down to you know, way below that. But again, I think the starting point is what it is enough, and especially in terms of debt maturity profile, is what we need to have enough time to successfully complete the turnaround and then organically further deliver the company going forward. And third one, Maria?
So regarding the franchisees question, our franchisees are currently performing slightly below than our corporate stores. This is partially explained because we are taking back some of those franchisees to our corporate own system, and because we want to revert the situation. The idea is that we are changing the franchisee, we are changing the way that a store is operated, and once you're ready, we are going to be looking for new franchisees to operate the store. This is going to take some time, so we think that end of 2019 this situation will be improved, but we will be still facing a challenging situation from a like-for-like perspective during 2019. How we are going to make sure those franchisees store work are more embedded in the way the new company is operating. As I was explaining before, the idea is we are going to be treating franchisees in the same way that we are working with our corporate stores. There will not be differentiation from an operational perspective. That means that we have already supervisors on the ground checking franchisees and corporate stores, and the way the standards are measured are exactly the same. We are also implementing a new operating and monitoring model where we are going to be measuring from operational perspective how those franchisees work. What it means, we are measuring not only like-for-like, but we are measuring shrink or loss. We are measuring out of stocks. We are measuring inventory level. And we are even measuring cleanliness and clutter in the stores. All of these measurements will drive to some specific, I would say, scores, and based on those scores, we will incentivize economically those franchisees. So they will be working or measured in the same way we drive our corporate stores.
Okay, understood. But just a follow-up on these franchisees, but over the long term, so post this whole restructuring process, how do you see the percentage of franchisees as it is today? Could it be higher, lower? What is the end game for these franchisees?
Franchisees model is one of our strengths in our model, and the idea is to keep, we try to be online with the current strategy from a franchisee's perspective.
Sorry. And this is not financially driven only. I mean, what it's true is that NPS, Net Promoted Score, is higher in franchise stores than in own store. And obviously, we have to do many things to improve our Net Promoted Score in own store. But it reflects that franchisees are partners, and they perform very well, and they are very important for the business model. We are not going to change dramatically the structure of own and franchise stores in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Charles Watford. Please ask your question.
Great. Thanks very much. Just two questions for me. First of all, out of the 3,500 stores, how many do you see as the right format? You mentioned on one of the slides that you have too many formats, so I just wondered if you could clarify for Spain how many of those you see as the correct format. And then secondly, you know, we've seen a number of these transformation programs, and clearly it's about building momentum and getting some quick wins. Could you highlight when you expect to see some results from this? Are we talking about H1 results, or are we talking about the end of 2019 when you would be able to show improvements to EBITDA and sales, you know, and cash flow?
So in terms of formats, as you know, Clarel and Cash & Carry are on sale because we want to reprioritize our focus. We want to keep La Plaza and the Angle because we have seen that those formats work and they are growing on sales, so we are not going to touch them. Potentially, we will increase the number of the Angle in the coming years, but not too much. The idea is to review Dia Market and Dia Maxi and build one unique format, which is able to be flexible depending on the location, but that will, but the idea is to have one unique conversation with the customer and also simplify the way we operate from a headquarters perspective. In terms of improvements in the store, in terms of this year, we are already launching some quick wins, and we are expecting to see some results in the stores we are working on in the second half of the year.
Yeah, and sorry, let me add something on the formats. For customers, it's not important the format. And when they go to a Dia Maxi or Dia Forest or Dia Market, they just go to Dia. So what is important is the commercial proposition they find, not the banner. So we are building a new format, but it doesn't matter the banner. This company is not a multi-format. It's maybe a multi-banner, but we want to have a unique commercial proposition because that's the only important for customers.
Okay, that's very helpful. Maybe just one follow-up, which is on your CapEx for 2019 and this transformation. I couldn't see any guidance on that, but do you have a figure of what we can expect for this year? Thanks.
It will be much lower than in the previous year because we have to invest just for maintenance and to develop the new format. So
maybe half.
Give you a figure, but much lower than
okay.
In 2018.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, and there are no further questions. Please continue. We also have, we are having questions. Our next question comes from the line of Patricia Cifuentes. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning. Can you give us any guidance on what's the margin rebasing that you need to do in Spain? Thank you.
Patricia, sorry, can you repeat the question again, please? We have some
Yes, I was wondering whether you could give us any guidance on what's the margin rebasing that you need to do in Spain to improve the offer, as you were saying.
As commented before, we cannot give this type of data during the call. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Commercially speaking, we have to continue being the offering the best price to our customers, and we do not see any problem to do that.
Operator, can we move forward to the next question, please?
Okay, the next question comes from the line of Old CC. Borja, please ask your question.
Hi, Borja and team, and good luck with the mandate. May I just be very blunt and ask, why would the 600 million cap raise proposed be anywhere close to being the right figure when we assess the cash burn run rate, your 4Q trading momentum, the need to cut prices further and share more profits with franchisees going forward, please?
We've done a substantial amount of work to see in the new capital structure of the company how large the bid of new equity should be. According to the financial forecast we have and how we see the company going forward, we think 600 is the right size for the equity component that we need in the capital structure. Remember that we're also going to be transforming and driving an increase in organic cash flow. This, in our analysis, in our view, this is the right size to make consistent and to make achievable the targets that we have for the five-year plan in the company right now.
Okay. Conceptually, do you guys think Dia should run the business at a higher or a lower margin versus Mercadona?
I think we cannot compare both models. Mercadona is EDLP business, very standardized and with covering not only weekly customer needs, but also monthly needs. While we are focused on convenience stores, our stores are much smaller, and we are focused on other type of customer missions. Our EBITDA as a result should not be comparable since we are investing and managing our operations in a different way.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further questions. Speakers, please continue.
Well, at this point in time, we start the internet Q&A session. The first set of questions comes from Francisco Riquel at Alantra Equities. The first one is, can you comment on the level of stock out during the Q4 and the support from suppliers?
Well, during Q4, we have the same level of stockouts that we usually have. That, of course, it has to be improved. I understand the sense of the question, that is about the support we receive from suppliers. We have to say that we didn't have any significant lack of stock due to the suppliers not delivering to us. We are very thankful to all suppliers for the support given to the company in difficult times. Only a few suppliers, less maybe one dozen, had problems, but not because the lack of commitment with the company, but with the lack of finance from assurance company. That is the way they use to finance the sales. It has not been any significant at all. Thank you.
A follow-up on franchises. Have you seen an increase in the churn from franchisees in the last few months, quarters?
No, we haven't. I mean, the situation of the franchisees is the same. We estimate that it will be the same.
Indeed, what we are doing is, since we have raised our standards to manage and measure franchisees, we are reducing slightly some of them because we are taking back the stores to revamp them and give them back to them. We are not losing franchisees up to now.
The last from Francisco Riquel is about working capital, is what type of normalization do you expect in the working capital, and what impact on the net debt after the rights issue?
Again, we will not be giving specific data or forward-looking statements, but from our speech relating to the spotlight situation of trade working capital by year-end, I mean, it would be pretty sensible to understand that to the extent that we're able to complete the refinancing and the capital increase, and we remove any financial concerns from suppliers, the level of supplier financing should gradually come back to more normalized level. That's the only qualitative reflection point I can do at this stage. Thank you.
There's a question coming from Tim Attenberg at Banco Santander. It's about Clarel. Clarel previous indication with the emerging was around 8%, and now it seems to be circa 3% from the consolidation figures. Is that right, or is there any adjustments we have to take into account?
The data we provide on Clarel are set out in the earnings release note, and no further comments. These are the audited figures of Clarel. I mean, obviously, business in 2018 has been worse in terms of profitability than 2017, and this is pretty much what we can say at this stage.
This a question from Iñigo Egusquiza at Kepler Cheuvreux. Is do you believe the 3 to 4% CapEx over net sales is enough to turn around the business, considering the CapEx plan of your main competitors are implementing at this point in time?
We think so. Our strategy is different than our competitors. We have already the right locations and the clients are there. What we need to change is our conversation with them, basically the stores. Our stores are smaller, and the way we want to drive omnichannel experience is leveraging on those stores. So we think that with the current investment, it will drive the growth that we are expecting.
We have a question from Felipe Rosa. Hi, Tom. Is you have sold close to 100 million euros in assets in 2018, mostly stores, I believe. Do you have any more stores to sell in the next years?
No. I mean, basically, we're going to be reviewing the store network to if we identify stores which have to be closed or are unprofitable. We will consider every option for them, including shutdown or sale, but it's not something that we're contemplating at this moment.
Well, this is all for today. Thank you very much for your time. And I remind you that next earnings release, Q1 2019, is due for 9th of May. Again, thank you very much for your time and have a good day.